This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is Stephen A. from Hollis, Queens, and the Michael K. Show starts now. Holla at your boy, Michael, Don Juan, and Peter.
Thank you, Stephen A. We'll talk to Stephen A. a little bit later on. A good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday, April 15th, 2022. An absolutely gorgeous day here in Baltimore. That's where I am. Don's in his secret lair, his home. I don't want to tell you where he lives. And
Jersey.
Peter is in parts unknown.
No, you can say where I am, too.
Where are you?
I am in Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Wait a minute.
What?
So you're like an Aaron Judge home run away from me. You're not going to invite me over?
Of course you're invited. Can you come to the Seder tonight?
Well, I have a game to do.
Well, then what are you complaining for? I'd love to have you.
Why can't we just hang out in, you know, your childhood bedroom and read comics and stuff like that?
Well, we could do that tomorrow. Do you want to bring Cameron Maben by?
Sure. And could I bring Meredith, too?
Sure. Of course. Is Meredith Super. Jewish?
No.
I was never sure.
I don't know. I don't ask people's religion. It doesn't matter to me.
Wow, you're very, very special. But yeah, I Michael's not lying, folks. The weather down here is absolutely lovely. It's pretty great in New York too, but beautiful down here.
Oh, lovely. So yeah, everything is set.
Say do something after the game, but these Yankee Oriole games tend to go a little long.
I hope that does. Hope that's not the case on Sunday, Don. I got things to do.
Well, I'm just. Oh, that was back when the Orioles were pretty good, but that ballpark. Gives up a bunch of runs.
I'll tell you what, they changed it though, Don. Left field is like 25 feet deeper now.
It doesn't matter.
No, it don't matter.
This is a glorified batting practice show this weekend.
Wow.
He's not
wrong. So we should start the game at 6 is what you're saying.
Yeah, if you want to get it over in time to swing by Peter's.
But there is no BP show today, so ENN will be a television vehicle.
Really? Today of all days?
Because you don't have BP shows first day in.
So, Michael, did you yell at the kids before you left? Were you getting excited about the Cano and Lindor home runs? You sound a little hoarse.
I'm battling something. I don't know what it is. Oh, no. I feel awful. But thanks for asking.
Well, I was concerned.
That's a shame.
No.
Did you notice?
It's awful. Terrible
headaches.
Sounds
hoarse. Something going
what?
On.
Do I sound hoarse?
Yes.
Really bad?
Not really bad. You just got that kind of
like Brenda Vaccaro
kind of sexy voice going.
Like Brenda Vaccaro.
Sure.
Do you remember her?
Jog my memory.
She's an actress that I think she did feminine product commercials. Mm.
So you couldn't give me a movie or a TV show?
I don't remember. Mets are winning, Don. How about that?
5-0. As I mentioned, Cano went the other way. Lindor, home run, couple of sack flies from Pete Alonso.
It's kind of special that Robinson Cano hits a home run on Jackie Robinson Day. He was named after Jackie
Robinson.
That's
right. It is fitting. And, of course, an emotional day with Jackie Robinson and everybody wearing the 42. And, of course, Tom Seaver's statue, which is absolutely gorgeous and fitting. You know, seeing that knee almost touch the ground, they really did a terrific job.
Yeah, everything about the day was great so far. You know, I was watching on the iPad, and it looks wonderful. So we'll keep you up to date on that score, and we start off right now with today's Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Dos Hombres. Yankees win yesterday by a score of 3-0. Amazing how odd baseball is. So on Wednesday, Vlad Guerrero hits 3 home runs and a double. And then yesterday, he strikes out for four times. So he goes from wearing the crown to wearing the golden sombrero. He had never in his life struck out 4 times in a game. And a lot of that had to do with Luis Severino.
That's right.
Who was dealing. I mean, if Luis Severino is healthy and stays healthy, the Yankees have themselves a co-ace. Because all you have to do, take a look at what Luis Severino did when he was healthy and the reason the Yankees gave him that 4-year, $40 million contract. This guy wasn't just any other pitcher. He was great. And then all these physical ailments have knocked him down for 3 years.
Right.
And here he is throwing 99 miles an hour. And David Cone said he's a better pitcher now than he was before when he was considered great because he's using his changeup more. And he's got a competitiveness because he hit a batter yesterday. And the Blue Jay bench started barking, especially the youngster Alec Manoah. And Severino stepped up the mound and started screaming at him. Shut up. I'm right here. Do you have anything to say? Just shut up. They need that sort of edge, guys. So that was a big start for Severino. It really was.
Hey, I was looking through my tweets back when DeGrom got hurt. And somebody, like a sarcastic, because we were talking about just how great DeGrom is and all that. There was like a sarcastic Met fan that tweeted both of us, Michael, saying, I can't believe there was actually a day where Michael and Don debated who was better, Severino or DeGrom. And he was being sarcastic, but it kind of reminded me that, you know, there was a time where Severino was like in the conversation as one of the top five pitchers in baseball. And then you forget about it because of all the injuries and then the ineffectiveness at the end of 2018, and which obviously led up to him being out with the Tommy John and all that, that there was a time where we were talking about him as among the best in the game. And if he can be healthy, is it possible that he can get back there? And if you get him back there, Michael, and you pair him with Cole, then you might have something special going with this rotation.
Yeah, I love the people that, you know, you're talking about, because they sit in their mom's basement and they scribble on her blackboard their myriad of thoughts. And if it doesn't work out, they just erase it. You know, we actually are in the arena and we have to say what we have to say every day. So you could pull anything up from 5-6 years ago that doesn't look good now. But, you know, only mommy hears what you say. So aren't you a big tough guy?
Well, some of these, I look at the avatars and it is disturbing sometimes that these are people with families. These are people that have careers. It's not just the Cheeto dust people. I think everybody kind of wants to call us out. But I looked at it as just a reminder that there was a time where that was a conversation. And there was a time that Severino was that good. Yeah, you know, if you want to stir it up, Michael, you want me to stir it up?
Yeah.
I'll stir it up right now.
Here we go.
Is it interesting that the only pitcher the Yankees have that couldn't get Guerrero out was Cole? Every other pitcher got him out. Every other one. What was he, 0-3 going into the game the other night, and he gets four straight strikeouts yesterday. Cole's the only one that couldn't get him out.
And Loaisiga.
Like, don't ruin it. Peter, I was on a nice roll. And yeah, then he just lets reality and the truth of the matter, let the facts get in the way.
Just let him go.
But
you want me to let him go and get into trouble? Is that what you want?
No, because it's not trouble. I'm just – I don't need to be right to make a point.
Boy, could that be the title of your sixth book or what? I Don't Need to Be Right to Make a Point by Don LaGreca.
Well, I mean, listen, I could if I was just having fun, because we know, because the big topic of conversation was Cole, and he went 5 2/3. You can't go, you know, three home runs and a double in a game like that in less than six innings. So I knew he had to face another pitcher, but come on. It was basically one of those, you know, based on a true story kind of comments that I was
Winning Time.
Exact, just like Winning Time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't take it at face value.
Now, there was something that happened at the end of the game. I think managers grow. They really do. They get better. They get more of a feel for the game. So they bring in Chapman yesterday in the ninth inning with a 3-0 lead. That's when you bring him in, right?
Sure.
And you could tell he could not throw his fastball for a strike. He was nude out on the mound. Nothing. Zero. And after he walked the second guy, just the second guy, Aaron Boone got up Michael King in the bullpen. Now, you can't take out Chapman until the third guy. And what did he do with the third guy? He walked him. They bring in King. King gets a strikeout of Springer, one of the most dangerous hitters in the lineup. And then he gets Bo Bichette to line into a game-ending double play. Threw 5 pitches, all strikes. Chapman threw 16 pitches, 4 strikes. And I don't think in his first couple of years as Yankee manager, Boone would have done that. He would have stayed with Chapman. But now every game is so important, especially a game against the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm not blowing this and waiting for Chapman to implode. I'm going to the bullpen right away. So now he's a veteran manager. He doesn't have to worry about people's feelings. He's just got a 3-year and an option extension, so he's going to be here for a long time. He's going to be here longer than Chapman. And there you have it. That's a real oniony move by a manager. Didn't care about upsetting Chapman, because how upset would 25 other guys have been if he blows that lead?
Exactly. And by the way, this is exciting. Honestly, this is what starts to make you think, could things be different this year? Because for the first couple of years of Boone, Michael, it did feel like a lot of decisions were guided by his, of course, his baseball intellect, but also this sort of sensitivity to making sure he earned everyone's trust. And the Yankee organization has shown he's earned that trust.
Well, I look at it a different way, Michael, if I can, is that if you remember, there were stretches last year, especially down the stretch, where Chapman had a caddy. Like, he wasn't allowed to get in any trouble. There was somebody up at the bullpen because of his ability sometimes to quickly melt down. So is this just, hey, this is something that is on the Yankees' radar that you can tell immediately whether he has it or not? You can tell by his body language. You can tell by the pitch selection. And if that's going to happen, Michael, I think you're going to see that throughout the year, where somebody is going to be at the edge of their seat in that bullpen, ready to jump up and warm up just by that first batter. And whether he has it or not, you could tell as a fan, all right, this is one of those nights where it looks like he doesn't have it. And even in a 3-0 game, guys, you know, a couple of bad batters and all of a sudden the tying run comes to the plate. And then by the time you get the pitcher up, it's too late. But, Michael, how many times did we see that last year? I remember one specific time, I think it was in Atlanta, where he just could not find the plate.
He's a weird bird because he's great. But there are moments where he's dreadful. Usually when you're that great, you don't have the dreadful moments. You might have bad moments. But yesterday, he looked about as bad as a pitcher could look. And, you know, you wonder, I know, it's been 9 years now, which is amazing, but everybody still has the specter of Mariano hanging over them. Mariano's not walking through that door. We know that. But goodness gracious, he's so different than Mariano. And the thing that bothered me about yesterday about him, you can't throw a fastball for a strike? I could see if you couldn't get a slider over a strike, or if you couldn't get your changeup over for a strike, or a splitter. The fastball? He had no idea where it was going. And the previous times that he had pitched in the first six games, he looked great. The thing I also worry about is that usually when he has a bad outing, he has a couple of bad outings. So I don't think that Chapman's going to be here next year. He's a free agent at the end of the year. The Yankees have $30 million tied up in Chapman and Britton. Now, this is Britton's last year, too. And if you look around baseball, there aren't that many teams that spend that sort of money on closers. And one of the strengths of the Yankee front office, to me, is just how great they are at uncovering these gems. Lucas Litke, Clay Holmes, Jonathan Loaisiga, Chad Green, all of those guys, every single person, well, maybe not Litke, but the other three guys that I just said, they can close at a fraction of the $16 million that Chapman has. So I've had people tell me, I don't think they could win with Chapman closing because he implodes too much. Now, the Yankees have the backup, as Don said, and they almost pitch him with something in the back of their head like having a caddy. But it wears on a team. And I always say, yeah, but when he's hot, he can go. And he did win a championship with the Cubs. But remember, Don and Peter, you remember, he tried to give that last game away. Protecting a 6-3 lead, he gave up the home run to Rajay Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So he is not an automatic closer. Now, it's strange I'm saying that because he's one of the greatest closers in the game. But he's not automatic. He's going to make you sweat. He's going to make you sweat every single time.
Well, so, Madden worked him in those playoffs, too.
Oh, he overworked him. Overworked him. Ridiculous. And
if you remember, Mother, he kind of was somebody, we talked about Cole with the sticky stuff. Remember, even after the sticky stuff, there was that feeling he lost his control. And not so much that he needed the sticky stuff to be effective, but did it help his confidence with his control? because he throws so hard. Like, I just wonder sometimes, does he just lose his confidence or not have it? Like, when he's warming up, he feels he doesn't have it, and he loses his confidence. It could be more of a mental thing than a physical thing with him.
Oh, I think it is. And also, there's a tell with him, as if he was playing poker. You guys are going to laugh at me. You always do anyway. If he comes out on the mound and he's not lathered up,
yeah,
he doesn't pitch that well. And yesterday, the sweat was not dripping from the brim of the cap, didn't have rivulets going down the back of his neck on his face. I mean, he was a little bit, you know, sweaty, but nothing like when he's really dealing. So that's always a tell. Maybe the Yankees know that too. Maybe the engine's not firing. I'm not quite sure. Not the same pitcher unless he's sopping wet.
And I think that would be, you know, there's obviously somebody there watching him warm up in the bullpen.
Mike Harkey.
Yeah, so Mike Harkey's probably letting Aaron Boone know it's not great tonight. You know, not to not bring him in because he's your closer and you had a 3-0 lead, but let's just have somebody ready. It doesn't look great tonight. I mean, I think that's smart. Because I always wonder that you got to keep him until he blows the lead. Then when he blows the lead, you take him out. You got to let him try to close the game. I'm sorry. Put egos aside here. You're going up against a really good offensive team. You've got a couple of runners on, one mistake, and you blow the lead. You got to try to find a way to win this game. We talked about it going in last night. The difference between a 4-3 homestand and 3-4 is night and day. You know, splitting with the Blue Jays as opposed to losing 3 out of 4. That was a big game last night. Early season game. And I'm sorry if it hurts feelings that somebody might be warming up when he's in trouble.
Now, we also talked yesterday about the barren wasteland at the bottom of the order. And it's funny how things turn. So Isaiah Kanafalefa yesterday ignited the offense, and he had 3 hits. And then Jose Trevino, he was in there instead of Higashioka, got 2 RBI singles and a stolen base. So they were the offense yesterday, and the top of the order wasn't. So it's just amazing how this game works. It's a phenomenal game, Peter. I wish you would embrace it.
And it's really like any other, right? Because usually you go to a basketball game, like on Sunday, you know that it's either going to be Durant or Kyrie.
Right.
You go to a football game, your quarterback's going to be good. And, you know, but it could be anybody. It could be anybody that's the hero. It could be anybody that helps you win the game. It's not always going to be the Stantons and the judges and the big guns in the lineup. In fact, they might not even be in the lineup.
Well, that is the Pinstripe Report brought to you by Dos Hombres, crafted with care. A spirit like no other. The perfect mezcal ever tasted. A unique blend of the finest Espadín agave made in a small village in Mexico. Dos Hombres. I thought I read that well.
Very well.
What are you going to have for the Seder tonight, Peter?
Well, I mean, listen, it's a Seder, right? So we're going to have your traditional items, your matzah,
right?
Your charoset.
What is that?
Charoset, at least for Ashkenazi Jews, is done. It's like nuts and sometimes raisins or dates, sort of like fruits like that, mixed together. Some people use wine. Natalie's family is Sephardic. They have different traditions, so they use like a lemon. It's more like lemon juice flavored, but Haroset's one of the things you have to eat on Passover that people actually enjoy.
This is so exciting.
Exactly, Mom. It's like, pass me more Haroset. It's delicious. So we'll have that. We'll have the maror, which is the bitter herbs, or as every Jew is obligated to joke, the bitter herbs. and we're having brisket tonight. We're having some chicken,
nice.
Some matzo ball soup.
Wow.
I would like to get drunk this year. That's part of my plan. I've never really gotten drunk because you drink 4 glasses of wine, but I feel that now it's time for me to get drunk off Manischewitz tonight with the family. That's the plan.
Now, is Miss Hatton with you or with her family?
Miss Hatton is with me. It is our first Passover together. Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So maybe you don't want to get intoxicated. That might reveal too much.
What do you mean? Don, I don't actually know how to even fully get intoxicated. The most I get is like, I'd like to feel a little sloshy while I'm reading the while we're reading the story. I mean, I've read it so many times. I know how it ends. I know how it starts. I need a little bit of time. You guys have never read a Haggadah before. Have either of you ever been to a Seder?
No.
I was once.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It's a beautiful tradition.
A tradition unlike any other?
Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
It's the masters of religious ceremony.
It really is. is.
Wow.
It's the oldest one. And, you know, and Anthony, our producer, gave us an entire biblical lesson before he went on the air today.
Yeah, he threw in some, he editorialized as well, which I thought was terrific.
Yeah, he did. He added some pieces I'd never heard before, but I did not realize that this
Ray Rowe.
The way that everything's working this year, it's the exact same, like, setup as the original Seder that, you know, the big one.
Now, we're going to have Alex Rodriguez on in a couple of minutes.
Sure.
And then we're going to have Stephen A. Smith on in the 5 o'clock hours. And we have a lot to do.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about this show.
I got a lot of questions for Alex.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
We got a big K-Rod coming up on Sunday. Big
well,
K-Rod.
I want to see how he's feeling after that Scud missile you hit him with last week. You know?
Oh, don't bring that up.
Oh, no, no, no. That was a one-time thing.
You think I let it go, Don?
Yeah, you got to let that go. Talk about hitting threes before the Minnesota Timberwolves game.
Can I just say to him, are you and Michael good? I'm just going to say that. Are you guys good? Everything good?
Just check. Do what you want anyway.
Like Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, I'm sure. Jimmy, what's up, baby? You good? I'm just going to check the temperature. By the way, I saw Young Sav last week. He said he regularly hears from people about, hey, Jimmy, what's up, baby? You good? Thanks to this show.
Now, when did that take place?
I would say the Jimmy thing. Don, what? It's already 5 years ago probably, right?
Yo, easily.
So he's now, he's pretty much middle-aged Sav.
Sav, a.k.a. Yeah. Sav, is definitely my age. So, yes,
Sav
if you consider me middle-aged.
So he's not so young Sav.
He's not as young Sav or Sav.
Wow.
It's one of the great stories, Peter, though, seriously.
I know.
There is audio of it. It's amazing.
Can we hear that, Anthony?
For people who don't know what happened, it's my friend Young Sav. We tell the story once a year. Young Sav was on a plane, and the former president Jimmy Carter got on the plane.
And here is what transpired.
Jimmy, what's up, baby? Good. Jimmy, what's up, baby? Good. Jimmy Carter, boy. Jimmy Carter, boy.
A drop so nice we played it twice.
Wow. One more time. Here we go.
Jimmy, what's up, baby? Good. Jimmy Carter, boy.
Did Jimmy respond?
Just called him Jimmy. He called him Yimmy.
I don't think he shook his hand. So Jimmy Carter shakes everyone's hand. So when he shook Sav's hand, he said, "Jimmy, what's up, baby? You good?" I don't think Jimmy said anything back. I think he just kind of kept walking.
He may not have completely understood.
Perhaps not. I mean, but listen, remember, this is before Jimmy became a very small person in that photo with
right.
the Biden family.
But the way I remember it, probably the hippest president before Barack.
Is that true?
He was wearing Allman Brothers T-shirts when he was building houses.
I mean, obviously we're talking hip in the '70s, so it's not going to necessarily translate 50 years later. But he was young.
What about
Clinton, remember though? Don? What an outrage it was when he said that he lusted in his heart.
That's right, he had lust in his heart, or the fact that he did like a Playboy interview.
Cray cray, as the kids say.
He let his brother run loose.
I don't think he had any control over Billy.
Well.
Just like you have no control over Dave.
Yeah, but I'm not the president. I think if I were the president, I would control Dave.
Dave is the Roger Clinton of the LaGreca household. There's no doubt.
Or the Billy
All right,
Carter.
A-Rod's coming up in just a moment. Sounds like Peter's going to make things uncomfortable for Alex, but
yeah,
we'll see.
That's
coming up in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so we just heard from Alex Rodriguez, Yankees Orioles tonight. Mets are playing their home opener right now at Citi Field. Take a look at the Yankees starting lineup, which is brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Anthony Rizzo at first leads off. Giancarlo Stanton's in right, batting second, hitting third. The DH, Josh Donaldson. Joey Gallo in left field will bat fourth, batting fifth. Third baseman, DJ LeMahieu. Gleyber Torres will play second base, so bat sixth, batting seventh. The center fielder, Aaron Hicks. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, the shortstop, will bat eighth and batting ninth. And catching, Kyle Higashioka with Jordan Montgomery on the mound. That's today's Yankees starting lineup, brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael K. Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. Now, before we talk any more baseball, Donna, I think it's only right that we have to note the passing, really, of one of the greatest hockey players of all time, Mike Bossy.
And one of those players that is among, you know, if you come up with the top five of what might have been as great a career as he had, 573 goals. He played 10 seasons. You know, he retired at such a young age because he retired at 30 because of a bad back. And this is a guy that was, you know, the only year he didn't score 50, Michael, was his last year in the NHL when he only played 63 games and scored 38. Just an absolute pure goal scorer. Wayne Gretzky, I heard him today say that if he ever had a breakaway, just go to center ice because you know he's going to score. And Gretzky had some unbelievable things to say about him because they played together on Team Canada. But what an awful year for Islander fans. It's, first of all, the disappointment of the season where they were expected so many great things and COVID and injuries derailed their season. They lose Clark Gillies, a Hall of Famer. Jean Potvin passed away as well. He was a member of the team for a while. And then to lose maybe the greatest of them all, Mike Bossy, it's just been such a tough season. Nice guy. And so fitting that the Islanders are in Montreal tonight, and that's where Mike Bossy was from. So he had been terminal. We had heard news that he was in hospice with lung cancer, so it was only a matter of time, but it doesn't make it any easier. But just one of those unbelievable talents, and his career was cut short, and more importantly, now his life gets cut short at just the age of 65.
Really sad, and you're right, Don. Just the, I mean, the sheer constant blows to the Islanders. It's amazing what type of year it's been for them.
Yeah, the text you sent earlier, Don, really hit me when I put together how bad it's been. It's just, you feel for the franchise and for that fan base.
And it's incredible because one of the great dynasties were those four straight Stanley Cups, and the fifth year they got eliminated in the final, and they won 19 straight series. And that team stayed together for so long, and they're just a part of forever, whether it's Bossy, Trottier, Gillies, Smith, of course, Arbor, who put the team together, Arbor, the head coach, and Torrey, who put the team together. And a lot of those guys are gone, and it wasn't that long ago. You know, we're talking about from, you know, 1980 through 83, and they're just such a part of Long Island, such a part of that team. So I'm sure they'll have all around the league this weekend moments of silence for Bossy because he was that important to the league. I'm sure they'll have something before the game in Montreal, and certainly when the Islanders come back, it's going to be emotional because he was such an integral part of that franchise, a fabric of that Islander franchise, and just too many blows in such a short period of time.
And from everything I've heard, Don, really good guy that everybody liked, right?
Terrific guy. I obviously did not grow up an Islander fan, but when I got to know the team, they were on our air when we first started. So I was always doing shows over at that hotel across the street from the Coliseum. There was a restaurant bar, sports bar, Champions. We actually did a show from there one time years ago.
I remember it well. The bar.
So we would do shows there, and that was those three straight years with Peter LaViolette when they were going to the playoffs every year. And I got to know a lot of those guys, and they were always kind of hanging out and part of the team because the Islanders made a really concerted effort when they were going through their lean times of honoring the past. And he was just they're all just great guys. And to lose Clark so young, to lose, you know, Mike so young, and also a season that just – I don't know if there – I'd have to dig deeper into it, and I don't have the appetite to go – this negative, but I don't know if there's been a team that was affected in one season by COVID like the Islanders were. I mean, they had to start the first 13 games on the road because they were getting their building ready, and then they just everybody was either hurt or got COVID, and they got off to such a slow start because of it, and they just never recovered. And such a season with promise to get derailed like that, and on top of that, seeing all these great players pass away, just it's really
Don. Can I ask you an ignorant question?
No questions are ignorant, otherwise you'd know the answer.
Thank you. You know what? You're right. It's the opposite of ignorance to seek the answers.
That's right.
Bossy, Potvin, Trottier, where is he among, like, the absolute elite all-time of the franchise?
You know, Potvin was a defenseman, so many people lean towards, because he was one of the best defensemen there was outside of, you know, Bobby Orr. But and Bossy's career got cut short. But to me, when you see 573 goals in that short a span of time, 50 goals in 50 games, 50 goals every year he played until the last year when he got hurt, it would be very difficult to argue that he isn't number one.
Wow.
Now, on a lighter note, you mentioned champions. That's where you had like a real bad taste in your mouth about Rick DiPietro. He big-timed you, so you told me, right?
Oh.
Yeah,
is that
well,
where it was?
So we were doing the show. We're doing one of the after the game, and Al Gattullo was my producer, and we're looking at the crowd, and he's having dinner with a couple of people in the booth, and went over and asked him if he'd like to come on. He barely acknowledged me. I got a grunt of a no, and then that was it. So I instantly did not like him.
Wow, I can't picture him doing that because he's.
But you know what? But the interesting part is, Don. You know, you're supposed to judge people not on how they treat people they know well or that they're trying to impress. How do they treat somebody who means nothing to them? And the answer with Rick DiPietro is like garbage.
But, you know, you're bothering people while they're eating. So I shouldn't judge people like that.
But you are, and you
but
did.
But I did. But I learned. That was, God, that was like maybe 17 years ago. I feel like I'm a different person now.
I'd also like to say you are a different person now, but I may be speaking out of school, but let's be honest, with the way that show speaks about me, who really cares anymore?
But
Don,
there's a similar situation. Like early in my career with the Rangers, I'd be the third announcer during the playoffs, and I kind of roam the crowd. We'd do interviews with people in the stands, like famous people, and I asked Liam Neeson, could I talk to you? And he said, no, thank you. I'm going to decline.
That's polite.
That's respect. And then you walk away going, you know what? I'm really sorry I bothered.
Wow.
Because, I mean, that's Liam Neeson. I mean, that's pretty big stuff.
Wait. You said, can I talk to you? Where was this?
At the Garden during the game. It was during a stoppage of play. And then we'd come back from break and I'd say, hey, I'm sitting here with Liam Neeson. What do you think of the game?
So you wanted him on air and he said, no, thank you. It wasn't
that's
that
right.
You struck up a convo.
No. I was asking to be on the air. Cindy Lauper, she accepted and we did that. And then they decided that it was too intrusive. We didn't do it anymore. But that's the way to decline an interview.
That's
not a grunt. And, you know, but then I was bothering him during eating. He doesn't remember it, I'm sure. I shouldn't judge.
Rick has turned into a terrific guy, okay? If you were to tell me that during his playing days he was the world's biggest nozzle, I would believe it 1,000%.
I am not going to sit here and let you talk about
it. Oh, you know it's true.
But think about it, though. The more I think about it, though, aren't you kind of asking for it if you're going to the bar, the sports bar, directly across the street from the place where you just played? Like, if you really wanted to keep it on the down low.
How did he know they were going to do a silly radio show there?
Rob, that's what I'm saying. If I'm doing there's a show, but even if he doesn't know there's a show, like, if you really wanted to keep it on the down low, would you go where all the fans go after the game, or would you go find some quiet place, you know, up Hempstead Turnpike to have a meal and not be bothered? So, well, on second thought, I was well within my right to ask, and I should have gotten a better answer.
By the way, it should be noted that tomorrow morning from 7 to 8 a.m., you can hear a lot more on the passing of Mike Bossy with Dave Rothenberg on his hockey show, the one that Don should be
there
hosting, but Dave hosts. 7 to 8 a.m. tomorrow morning right here on 98.7.
Also, I was on with
Bart and Hahn today.
Really?
And they're very upset that we don't think that they could beat J. Will and Keyshawn.
Come on. Well.
And I tried to explain, at least I couldn't speak for you two. I tried to explain why I thought that way, and they did correct me. They said, well, Allen's not covering Jay. Bart would be covering Jay. And Bart said that he would be bodying him up. He wouldn't be able to score. And I said, I'll take any bet you want. I believe that they'll destroy you.
Wait a minute. You would body him up? What, like just lay on top of him? Foul
like
him to death?
Player.
I mean, there are rules, no? Even on the playground, there are rules.
Yeah, you can't play hack-a-shack. I mean, you got to play the game. By the way, speaking of Shaq, yesterday, while I was doing something, Natalie was just kind of hanging out, and I walked out, and she had started watching the – do you guys remember when Turner produced the Shaq-Kobe interview?
Yep.
Have you ever watched it?
Yeah.
Don, you ever seen it?
No.
I got to tell you, it's incredible. I could not recommend it more. I don't know if I've ever seen two, you know, iconic athletes in that sort of honest a situation – talking about the way they didn't like each other and coming back together. And obviously now with everything that's happened to Kobe, there's another layer to it that when you watch it. But I forget which streamer it's on, but you could find it, Kobe and Shaq. It's pretty amazing.
Starling Marte, Mets' third home run of the day. It's 9-1 Mets. A little bit of a laugher, so the Mets are about to go 6-2.
Wow.
Now 10-1 Lindor, back-to-back and belly-to-belly.
So that's two for Lindor?
That's two for Lindor.
All
right. Right now, Alonso is 3-1. Maybe we can get back to back to back.
And belly to belly to belly.
Nutella.
Let's go
what
to
color
Pat
is Lindor there? Is that
on Long Island. Pat Calabria, he covered the Islanders for a long time. So, hey,
oh,
Pat,
sure.
What's up?
Hi.
Hey, Pat.
You know, I'm hearing the nice things you're saying about Mike Bossy, and all of them are true. And I think the thing that gets lost sometimes is how intelligent the player was. Of course, he was a natural goal scorer, but he was a very intelligent player. And he also was, and you don't think of him in these terms, but he was a tough player because he took a lot of whack, and he was never the kind of a winger who would take a whack and then hide the rest of the game. He was very determined. Now, I think back to the 1980 finals against Philadelphia when the Flyers tried to intimidate him, and during a stoppage in play, Mel Bridgman kind of like targeted him, and Bossy refused to back down and actually knocked Bridgman on his butt. You know, and Mel Bridgman was a pretty tough player. So while Mike was a great natural goal scorer, he was very smart and in his own way very tough.
Now, you knew him, Pat, because you covered the team for a while. As good a guy as people make him out to be?
A terrific guy. And I tell this story. I covered the 1981 All-Star game in L.A., and we're on the flight back to wherever we were going, and Mike pulls his All-Star jersey out and says, "Here." Not anything I asked for, and it was his way, without saying so, of thanking me for the great things I wrote about him, as if I would have a choice, because all he did were great things.
That's a nice story.
Thank you, Pat.
That's a nice story. Thanks for sharing that, Pat. We appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. A class guy.
Well, yeah, and for those that just tuned in, Mike Bossy passed away today, so really, really sad. Yankees playing the Orioles tonight, Camden Yards, first road game of the year. First game of a three-game set. So I gave you the Yankee lineup. Let me give you the Orioles starting lineup, because that's what we do. Mm. Brought to you by
Nissan.
Don't
have to, but it's nice that you're doing.
Cedric Mullins in center field will lead off, batting second. The third baseman, Ramon Urias.
You could have stopped
Mountcastle.
After Mullins. So just
what?
To give people the you could have stopped after Mullins. It's the people, the one person everyone's heard of. Keep
no,
going.
No, there'll be others.
Okay.
Just pipe down.
Here we go.
Batting third, playing first base, Ryan Mountcastle.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of Trey Mancini? He's a
okay. Boom, boom. Love him.
Batting fifth, playing right field, Anthony Santander.
Nope.
Austin Hayes in left field will bat sixth. Mm-hmm. Batting seventh, playing shortstop, Jorge Mateo, former number one draft pick for the Yanks, first-round draft pick. Robinson Chirinos behind the plate will bat eighth. And batting ninth and playing second base, it's Chris Owings with Jordan Lyles on the mound getting the start. That's today's starting lineup brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now, get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store at NissanUSA.com. Go back to the phones. Mike in Princeton. Mike. Mikey Mike.
Hey,
Mike.
Can you guys hear me? I'm on the ear pod. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
you're
sure.
Great. Apple does a good job.
Sorry about that. Yes. So I wanted to talk about, number one, I named my son after Aaron Judge back in 2019. He's 3 years old now. And I just kind of feel like the Yankees kind of missed the window between the championship window that they had for about 5 years. And now, like A-Rod said, I agree that, like, they didn't sign him when he was younger, because I know the Yankees don't sign players, you know, early. But now he's 31, and it's like a hard spot. Do you really want to pay the guy till he's 40 or 38? Now, I don't know what to do now. You know what I mean? Do we just wait?
You know what? That's why, Mike, the fact that people look at the offer and say, well, the Yankees didn't do enough, they did more than they wanted to because they realized the value of the guy. They gave him 7 years at over $210 million. They gave him a lot of money, and I'm not saying – he should have taken it. I'm not him. But he has the right to say no, and I want more. But no one in baseball is criticizing the Yankees for that offer. But, and one thing I would disagree with Alex about, when were you going to sign him, guys?
I was just going to say that, Michael.
Well, when were you going to sign him? Were you going to sign him in the second year when he was hurt? You're going to sign him the first year when he hit 52 home runs? How do you know it's not a fluke?
First of all, you can't sign him off his rookie year, right? Because you want to see what – so then the next year he plays in 112 games. The year after that, 102. And then he plays half of the 2020 season. So it was certainly a thing.
Yeah, it's tough.
Now, once you got Peter to the end of last year or during last year when he's having the big season, but it doesn't sound like Judge would probably have it.
Yeah, the only time would have been in the back half of last year. But yeah, how much of a discount would they have gotten for doing it then?
And you know, Alex said, you know, he's been with the organization 9 years. Oh, okay. And he's a great guy and he handles himself beautifully. But let me let you in on a little secret. A lot of people in the minor leagues are great guys. They don't turn out to be good players. So they're not going to sign him in the minors.
No.
They're not going to sign him after his rookie season. And let's say they did. You think he would have just taken a contract that would have taken him to 33? No. He would have wanted a contract like what Mookie Betts got, 13 years, and what Mike Trout got.
Hey.
So there's no easy thing here. The only thing, and I agree, Don and Peter, 2 years ago, if you make that attempt, but really did you make that? Would you want to make that attempt when he played half of a 60-game season?
No. And sometimes, just like the Kershaw situation, Michael, it stinks, but is it really anyone's fault? Now, obviously, there are going to be people that are going to take sides, but you can understand the Yankees offering what they did. And the concerns wanting to give more, and people around baseball believe that that was a generous offer, so you can't kill the Yankees, and you can't kill Judge for wanting more because he's a heck of a player, and he's got the right to test free agency if he wants to. So it stinks for Yankee fans, and it stinks for the caller who named his son Judge, but is it really anyone's fault, or is it just the circumstances that created this? And we'll see. But sometimes things can stink, and it not really be anybody's fault.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's a guilty party here. I agree,
no,
Don.
I really, again,
and I don't like when people criticize Judge for turning it down. I don't like when people criticize the Yankees for offering what was a great deal, but it just wasn't what Judge wanted. Okay, that's what negotiating's about.
There are going to be a lot of people, Michael, that will side with Judge just because right now they're not the biggest, you know, Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman fans. And these are the same people that think the Yankees are cheap. So, of course, they're going to criticize what many people believe was a fair deal. And you've got other people who think they should give Judge whatever he wants, which isn't realistic either.
Let's take a brief timeout. You heard from Buster Olney saying he doesn't think the Yankees are going to get Judge back at the end of this year. He also had some strong things to say about Gerrit Cole. We'll hear from Buster in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Alex said to give you his number.
Oh, please.
So it's 1-800-N-O-C-H-A-N-C-E.
Wow. You really – no, I love Alex. I love Alex, but if you think he's above the numbers in my Rolodex, I'll take issue.
Ooh. Don LaGreca's House of Hot Dogs, 1-800-EAT-ME.
Tell me, Peter.
By the way, I bet it's the opposite.
The name that's higher than Alex in your Rolodex. Give me one.
Oh, we're going to play this again?
In your Rolodex, not that you know, that you can call.
Joey Badbutt.
Yeah. see?
Hold on.
Jesus.
I want to come with the best.
Ballard.
Ballard's not it.
You don't
Alex here at Precept, Ferg.
No. I'm sure he's got some Titans in there. Not Tennessee.
He's not
either.
Naming one, though, Don, is he? Not one.
Well, I think he's trying to pick.
I want it to be one. I want
Zach Britton.
I just want to end it with one person.
I got some good ones, but they're only good because of me. Meaning, like, I'm impressed by them.
You have Ruth Buzzy, right?
No, I got, like, Adam Graves.
Nice.
I got Andy Pettit. How did I get Andy Pettit?
I love when Don says something, Michael, that's so Don, he doesn't even know it.
No, I knew it. You heard me say it.
You knew it. I think Drake or Kendrick Lamar surpasses A-Rod.
Mm. Wow.
Safely.
Really? You have Drake's number in your Rolodex.
I have like four of them.
None of them work.
Are any of them still valid? That's a fair question, but they're all here.
So let me get this straight. Let's see if we can, like, parse this out. Drake is calling Alex for Minnesota Timberwolves tickets.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but because he owns part of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
What?
Not like I'm just going to call Alex to get, you know, some random NBA tickets.
But I got a question. Drake would just be able to call up Adam Silver and get those tickets. But no, he's got to ask Alex, please.
Well, no, how do you think? And Alex would return the favor if he wanted Drake tickets. He's not going to call someone else. He's going to call Drake. He's not going to call Justin Trudeau.
Well, it really depends on what circles you run. Obviously, on a sports show,
you
Alex Rodriguez bigger? Probably means more than Drake, but on Hot 97.
Sports. What sport? How about Pierre Garçon? Does he surpass? Robert Griffin III.
That's
no.
good. No. Now, doesn't surpass though. A-Rod.
But big name. Washington football team president, Jason Wright.
Let's go to Diamond Notes. Time for Diamond Notes, brought
right
to you by
there,
Two by London.
Turn. Right there.
The engagement shop by London
done.
Jewelers.
That's the moment.
Here is Buster Only on DiPietro and Rothenberg. And he was asked, how is Garrett Cole viewed around baseball?
I really believe that if you gave truth serum to people throughout the game, including folks in the Yankees front office, their answer would be, I don't know what he is. Because the numbers since Spider Tack crackdown last year, it was dramatic. And he had spurts last year. He was excellent in the second half of the year. He was a Cy Young candidate. But there's been enough sample size now where I think they have legitimate questions. Okay, how much was that pure dominance that he had after he went from Pittsburgh to Houston based on his ability to spin the ball the way that he did? Whatever he was using, and we know got that was a text message email to that clubhouse attendant with the Angels who would mix the special mix that pitchers like. How much was that, you know, part of how great he was? And, you know, I say that not meaning to isolate him, because we know probably about 90% of pitchers were using something. But if you're the Yankees and you had that huge investment in him to be a number one starter, not to be a number three starter, a good number two or number four, you paid him that kind of money, the biggest contract ever given out to a pitcher, to be one of the top two or three pitchers in baseball. And I don't think anybody knows if he's going to be that again.
And then the follow-up question, would the Yankees back out of the Cole deal if they could?
No chance they do it. No chance.
Wow.
they would revisit it. There's too much information. There's too much, you know, money owed at the back end. Because every time teams do these massive deals, especially with pitchers, let's face it, and I've had a GM lay it out to me one time this way. First 3 years, you expect total dominance. The next 3 years, you expect, okay, they're going to be pretty good. And then the last 3 years are kind of a wash. Where are you right now in that timeline? It's Garrett Cole, who's a good pitcher now. That's what he seems to be. He seems to be a good pitcher. And you're into that in year three of this contract. That's earlier than what you counted on. As we go along here, what's he going to be at the back end? And maybe he'll figure it out so that he goes back to being as dominant as he was. But I think a lot of people are wondering about a lot of these guys in a post-Spider Tack foreign substance crackdown.
Kind of weird, though, that, you know, he seems to be the one that everybody talks about. And Don brought up Chapman earlier. You know, Chapman has a hard time gripping the baseball, too. But, you know, you also have to do your due diligence if you're signing a guy to that contract. Is he a great pitcher under any circumstance, or do you think that there could be something with an outside influence? So I don't think the Yankees get to get a mulligan on this. It's buyer beware.
Yeah, and I don't know what they knew about Spider Tack. You know, we were all thinking, Michael, and you're as inside as anybody, that, oh, well, listen, the Astros teach spin rate.
Right.
And now we're finding out, well, maybe they didn't. Maybe it's just because of learning that this way to grip the ball is also now a way that you can create greater spin. Now, not every pitcher has success because of his spin rate. Not everybody's spin rate has changed. His did. He kind of became the face of this thing because of that call to the clubhouse that Buster was alluding to. And the fact that Michael, since then, he's still an outstanding pitcher. We had Jeff Passan on when this whole thing happened, said, listen, he's still an outstanding pitcher, but is he what the Yankees paid for? And Buster's right. When you sign a 9-year contract, you know the back end of that contract's not going to be great, but you figure at least the first 3 years it's going to be spectacular. Well, if he continues to pitch the way he's pitching, you know, that the first 3 years have not been spectacular. Forget about the Cy Young almost winning that. Is that, hey, he was brought here to help them win a championship, and he lost a wild card game. So that's maybe unfair, but that's how he's going to be judged.
I think it's a little too early right now. You know, people are ready to bail just on two starts, and I know the wild card game wasn't good, and he didn't need me to give him an excuse, but it seems like there was something up with the hamstring. But then I'll go back to what Derek Jeter said. If you're playing, then there's no excuses. Can't pitch, then don't pitch. But if you're pitching, you better pitch well.
The problem, and listen, Mike Mussina went through this. Jason Giambi went through this. I mean, every time a free agent or there's a big trade and you become a New York Yankee, you are brought here not to win MVPs, ask Alex Rodriguez, not to win Cy Young Awards. You're here to help the Yankees win a championship. And him specifically, Michael, because that seemed to be the missing piece. They didn't have that big-time pitcher to shut you down in a big game 7 or a 5 or facing elimination. They went out and got him specifically for that wild card game against the Red Sox, and he lost it. And that stinks for him because there's very few players that join a team where that's the level of expectation. But that's what he's going through right now. And like I said, Alex Rodriguez, the same thing. Alex was killed, Michael. He was winning MVPs, he was getting killed. Why? Because it wasn't part of a championship season.
One thing I would say, again, not here to defend Gerrit Cole, in his first year, he pitched very well in the postseason. Very well. And the greatest players in history sometimes don't play well in some postseason series. Mariano Rivera, there's no doubt he's the greatest relief pitcher of all time. He blew a game 7 of the World Series. You can't blow a bigger game. He blew those two games against the Red Sox in 04 that allowed the Red Sox to come back from down 3-0. He blew the game in Cleveland in 1997. So, the greatest of all time at times struggle. But he had already had equity in the bank. So that helped him. And I guess the best comparison is Alex. Because up to game 3 of that 2004 series, Alex was unbelievable. And even when he was in the playoffs with the Seattle Mariners, he was unbelievable. Really good. But then once game 4 hit, everybody hit the skids, and I think he put pressure on himself. I don't think Cole will do that. But we'll see. I mean, only time will tell.
Okay, can I ask you guys a question about something Alex said? Okay, Don, can I ask you? Did you guys, the moment he said that he was with Aaron Judge at the Super Bowl in Michael Rubin's Fanatics suite.
Right.
And he said Judge was the guy everyone was approaching and asking for a picture. It got me thinking about, realistically, who is left in the game that would truly stop other people of import and get them to care. And in my mind, visually, the only people who immediately came to mind were Aaron Judge and potentially Shohei Ohtani, who stands out as, you know, he's a monster also. Like, and also, when did that change? Because at the time Alex got in the league, there were still so many, from Cal Ripken to Griffey Jr., Ozzie Smith. There were all these guys who existed who were really visible, and Wade Boggs, whoever, that it really, it's not the same. I just hadn't thought about it in that way. But
and
really
you wonder
an
if
indicator.
Judge would be recognized if he wasn't one of the tallest guys in the history of the game. I mean, like, he's easy to recognize.
That's true.
You know,
if Mike Judge was 5'11", I mean, if Aaron Judge was 5'11", and he was Mike Trout.
But you know what? I think that Aaron realizes this as well. Being his size, being his skill set, and being a Yankee, all those things conspire together to make him famous.
Yeah.
But so, you know what? That's
who's second, though?
I got to, from a fame standpoint,
yeah.
Michael, you just said a mouthful there. As big a name as he is in the face of the franchise and maybe the face of baseball, from just a sheer recognizability and popularity and ability to earn away from the game, he needs the Yankees more than the Yankees need him. Yankees will move on, all right? They'll replace him. They'll still be good. But if Judge is a Padre, you telling me he still carries the same weight? That he does as a Yankee?
You know why? Because he's already established. If he had started with the Padres, a different deal. He's taking his star to San Diego.
I don't know, man. I really think that more than any other team, more than the Lakers, the Celtics, any franchise in sports, leaving the Yankees is different.
Well, you know why? Because it's a regional sport, but the Yankees aren't a regional team.
It's true.
The closest thing of a guy leaving the Yankees, you know, Robinson Cano went to anonymity playing in Seattle.
Exactly. I was thinking of Cano.
All right, by the way, the Mets, it's over at Citi Field. They win 10-3, their home opener. What a start beautiful. For that.
Beautiful.
Yeah, very, very good. We'll talk about that. We'll come back. That's Diamond Notes, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their 6 area locations. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Mets win 10-3. Big day at Citi Field. Sellout crowd. Place looked great. They unveil the Seaver statue. Long due, overdue, but still beautifully done. And they're 6-2. Excited or not?
Yeah. I'm very happy. It's one of those situations, though, where I found, like, God, they could very easily be 8-0, right? Because they had leads going into the eighth inning in both of the games that they lost. Now, have they had to beat the best in the league? I mean, they took 2 out of 3 from Philly, and Philly's one of the teams they're competing with, at least for a wild card. Braves are off to a bit of a slow start, so you get to jump on them. Nationals aren't good. Diamondbacks are going to be a 100-loss team again. But 6-2 is 6-2. And they're finding ways to score runs, although not at a great clip up until today. But, you know, Lindor looks great. Cano was slumping until today. He hits a home run. Alonso has been as advertised, both with home runs, and he had a couple of sacrifice flies today. And, hey, you're 6-2, and DeGrom hasn't thrown a pitch. Scherzer certainly can be better. So what's not great about winning 6 of your first 8 games?
And they've been resilient. So today, COVID hit them.
Yeah.
And they just plow on. You know, they lose DeGrom, they plow on. Scherzer is not vintage Scherzer, and he just plows on. They have a different Met team. I don't know if it's from Showalter. I don't know if it's the energy that Steve Cohen has brought them. It just feels different. But you've rooted for this team since you were an infant.
Yeah.
Does it feel different to you?
Well, it's hard to say, Michael, just because, you know, a few years ago they had that great start where they 10-2 to start the season or whatever. I mean, so teams get off to great starts and teams get off to slow starts and end up having phenomenal season. It's for the first 8 games of the season. But the different feel comes from, hey, they're kind of matching the expectations. This is not a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise. They've got really good players. You know, Canna and Marte were great acquisitions. You know, you knew Lindor was going to be better than he was last year. All right? This is still a good pitching staff, even with DeGrom out. You know, so I'm kind of used to, as a Met fan, them not living up to the expectations. Now they're very much living up to the expectations. And what makes it a different feel more than anything else is, God, when was the last time you really felt good about a manager they brought in? I mean, to this level. I mean, you couldn't feel this way about Rojas or Callaway because they didn't have any experience. You couldn't really feel that way about any of the managers before because, again, they didn't have a resume. Even Bobby Valentine, right, he had a resume, but it wasn't, like, littered with championships or even playoff appearances, right? He had some nice seasons in Texas with the Rangers and had some success in Japan. But here comes Buck Showalter.
I think he's the best manager they've had since Gil Hodges.
That's going to be your opinion because you're a fan of Buck, and I'm a fan of Buck. But when you just look at the back of the baseball card, yeah, he hasn't won a championship, but he's had success everywhere he's been. He's had winning teams. He's had playoff teams. And really, well, go through the history of managers who came in. Even Gil came in not as highly touted as Buck. Davey Johnson, not as highly touted. Davey Johnson came from the Mets minor league. No managerial experience outside of that on the major league level. What, George Bamberger?
You know,
like
I
Jeff Torborg?
I
mean,
said,
really?
Though, Don.
What's that?
He's not the best manager since Gil because Davey Johnson was a good manager.
Yeah, but
Since Davey.
Right. Well, listen, Terry Collins took this team to a World Series. But what I'm saying is coming in, evaluating the season, looking at a brand new manager hired, when was the last time that you felt good about the manager they hired based on the resume? Like I said, is it Jeff Torborg because he had some success with the White Sox? Is it Bobby because he had some success with Texas? Gil,
I think the closest one is Valentine.
What did Gill have? A little bit with the Senators, right?
Yeah, he was the Mets went out and got him. He was definitely respected.
No, he was respected as a ball player, but there was an unknown about how good a manager he could be.
But he was a good manager with the Senators.
You know, the only one, yeah, but you didn't do it. Well, you couldn't do anything with the Washington Senators.
Right.
And I guess, no joke, the best resume for a first-year manager with the Yankees was Casey Stengel. Like, nobody's going to be able to touch that resume. But the idea is...
No. The first year with the Mets, you mean. But with the Yankees, he was a laughingstock.
No,
they couldn't understand why they hired him.
Well, that's why we're talking about first year with the Mets.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm saying... Coming, because you talk about the expectations. It's, let's see what this manager can do. Let's see what this Davey Johnson can do. Let's see if Bobby can be better than he was in Texas. Let's see if Torborg can, you know, do something outside of one run with the Chicago White Sox, right? This is a guy that comes in with an impressive resume that you could really you check the box immediately and say, are they good at manager? Oh, yeah. Couldn't say that about Terry Collins. Couldn't say that about anybody else
about,
that they
how
had.
About, how about? You don't think Willie would get that distinction? That they're good
at manager?
No,
because it was his first year.
It was right.
He'd never managed before.
Coming in.
See, yeah, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about the best managers in Mets history. We're talking about you go into a season, you just hired a manager for the first time.
Yeah.
He's first year with the Mets, Peter. Yeah, I respected Willie Randolph. I respected Bobby Valentine. But did they come in like Buck did? You know, Jerry Manuel. You just go through the whole list where it's like, all right, I want to see how good this manager is. Does anybody really feel like I got to see how Buck's going to be? You know what Buck is, and you got to be thrilled with it.
All right, let's take a brief timeout. We'll reset at 5 o'clock. Remember, it's Jackie Robinson Day all around Major League Baseball. They named Times Square Broadway and Jackie Robinson Way for this one day instead of 42nd Street. So there's a lot to be said that he didn't just break the color barrier. He made a difference in the history of this country. So we'll talk about all of that when we get back right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Louis Severino was dealing. I mean, if Louis Severino is healthy and stays healthy, the Yankees have themselves a co-ace. Take a look at what Louis Severino did when he was healthy and the reason the Yankees gave him that 4-year, $40 million contract.
I was looking through my tweets back when DeGrom got hurt, and there was like a sarcastic Met fan that tweeted both of us, Michael, saying, I can't believe there was actually a day where Michael and Don debated who was better, Severino or DeGrom. It kind of reminded me that there was a time where Severino was like in the conversation as one of the top five pitchers in baseball. And if he can be healthy, is it possible that he can get back there? And if you get him back there, Michael, and you pair him with Cole, then he might have something special going with this rotation.
The Michael K. Show.
I would like to get drunk this year.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back to the show. Big holiday weekend. We hope you enjoy Passover and Easter. All families together. Have the best time. Stay safe. The whole deal. Peter is with his family for a big Seder tonight. Didn't think about inviting me, but that's cool. I understand. I'm not really a member of the family.
Why do you do that?
What do you mean?
You got a game.
I wanted an invite, Don. Is that so bad? It's the perfect invite by Peter. He knows I can't come.
Here's the thing. I'm telling you right now, you are invited to stop by here anytime all weekend. So tomorrow, for example, Don, if he's not a fraud, you could wake up, easily get down here in 40 minutes, have a little brunch with the Rosenbergs, and get right back to Baltimore. What time's the game?
Tomorrow? 7.
Yeah. Oh. Don, sounds easy, no?
So no, it's 40 minutes away?
Yeah, top.
No, I don't have a car.
You can't
get one?
Why don't
you pick me up?
If I pick you up, if I drive you both ways, you'll come?
No.
See, why do we bother with this? Now, more important news, I didn't want to start at 3 o'clock, but I think it's worthy of the 5 o'clock hour.
Who knows?
I do need you guys,
we'll be the judge of that.
I do need you guys to know that something very important and monumental happened in my life today.
Oh, talk to us.
I, Peter Rosenberg, at 42 years old, of sound mind and what's the other thing?
Body.
Body also? Okay, yeah, I thought that, but it didn't feel right. Of sound mind and body, tasted Arby's for the first time.
What have you been doing for 42 years?
Not eating Arby's, apparently.
There's not. You can't kill them because they're not many. There's like one by me. It's like
there's
still
one
like
in Manhattan, I think.
Away.
Don, I think there's one in Manhattan.
So, and your review?
Here's my review. We got a beef and cheese. We got a, what was the other one? A beef Reuben. We got a Reuben. A corned beef Reuben. Yep. We got curly fries. And we got the new boneless chicken wings they've been promoting.
Okay.
The hot honey ones. The boneless bites were incredible. Delight, a true delight. The curly fries, particularly when dipped into the horsey sauce, were just fantastic. I love the horsey sauce. I'm one of the biggest horsey guys in the business today.
Yep.
The actual sandwiches, though, to the meat of the matter, the beef and cheese and the corned beef Reuben were good, but I have to say, and I know this is nozzly, as someone who lives in New York and goes to New York delis, like, it was fine, but it wasn't like a Reuben to write home about.
Well, there are not a lot of Arby's dotting the streets of Manhattan.
I guess you're right. Like, you're not trying to compete with Katz's.
Right.
I made a mistake.
The roast beef is good, and the crinkle fries would have been the better choice than the curly.
So crinkle fries better than the curlies?
I find that to be the case, yes. And you know what Arby's, you know how they got Arby's?
No.
R.B.
America's roast beef.
America.
Yes, sir.
America's roast beef. Arby's.
So you didn't get the roast beef, and it's in the name.
That is true. But
yeah,
let's be honest.
Peter orders a burger at Chick-fil-A. He's smart like that.
No, hold on. That's not fair. Corned beef is roast beef at Chase.
But it's not roast beef.
It's so similar. By the way, I think the beef and cheese is roast beef.
Yeah, but if it was corned beef, it would be Acbees.
No. I got the corned beef brisket, and we shared a beef and cheese. Don, you may need to look it up. I believe the beef and cheese, though, Don, is the roast beef. It's just with cheese, and it's called the beef and cheese.
Oh, okay.
So it was roast beef.
All right. I'm glad you experienced some part of Americana.
I feel more
actually,
American.
Right now, I wished we did this at 3, because then it would have been over.
Yeah, it would have been over. Mets win 10-3, their home opener. Yankees are playing tonight.
Yes.
And I don't want to do this all the time, Don. I just don't want to. Because it's like banging your head up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron Boone is talking right now to the media, and we gave you the Yankee lineup earlier, and Aaron Judge is not in the lineup. And nothing wrong, Boone said, just the day. The guy owns this ballpark more than Peter Angelos does.
Does he really?
Monday is an off day.
That's the thing, Michael.
I'll never figure it out. No. I'll never sign off on it. It doesn't make sense. And I know what Aaron would tell us. By giving him these days off, that keeps him healthy. He has a day off on Monday. Then if you want to give him 2 days off in a row, give him a day off in Detroit. You have the beat up on the Orioles like they made fun of your mom.
Well, you know that
the Tampa Bay Rays won the East last year and they were 18-1 against the Orioles? And the Red Sox won the East the previous season, and they were 17-2 against the Orioles. The Orioles are 1-5 coming into this game. Now, one flip side could say, well, we don't really need Aaron Judge to beat them. But why mess?
To be fair, though, we were saying, well, if you're going to give guys off, give them off against the Orioles. You should be able to beat them no matter what. But my argument is going to be he needs seven games. I mean, listen, I know it's a long season. It's unrealistic now in this day and age to play or expect them to play 162 games. But you want to save a day off? How about when they get to those like 96-degree days with 100% humidity in Baltimore? You know what? Take that day off. All right, who needs to play on that day when the Orioles are probably already out of it and you've established yourself as a playoff team? But this early in the season, guys, and Alex said it best, and Alex excelled in this sport, played it forever. You want to get into a rhythm. You want to come to the ballpark knowing you're going to play. And then when you're sitting out, it's disjointed. I'm sorry. And I understand that he's going to need his rest, and the hope was you were going to sign him to a long-term contract, and that big body and all that is not conducive to a long career. But on day eight of the season, they got to get a rest. Stanton had to get a rest after five games or six games into the season. Come on, really? It's April. This is the perfect time to play. It's 50, 60 degrees outside.
Oh, literally, you'd rather be outside.
I'll tell you what, though. So we bring this up, right? And I'm telling you, they are so firm in their belief, they're rolling their eyes. I mean, this is not in the Yankee offices. Oh, these jerks are doing this again. But you're not going to convince me otherwise. I want Aaron Judge to play 155 games.
Well, listen, you understand certain times you're going to take off. You know, the day after you clinch, day game after a night game, second game of a doubleheader. You're 0 for your last 20, and you just need to kind of get your mind right. There's plenty of times. Nobody expects you to be Cal Ripken Jr. anymore, okay? Nobody's expecting you to be Steve Garvey or Lou Gehrig. I mean, that's over. But this early in the season, and the fact that everybody does it, I don't have to like it. I don't like load management basketball either. It's basically telling your fans there's too many games. We can't do it. It's just too many games to expect us to play. Well, if it's too many games to play, Michael, then don't play as many games.
I mean,
but
honestly,
they won't do that because they'll lose money.
The funny thing about it with baseball in particular is that baseball's not an impressive sport in the physical exertion. It's an impressive sport in the skill to hit a baseball. It's not basketball or soccer where you're burning 10 pounds every time you play. In fact, the reason Cal Ripken and Lou Gehrig are icons is because they were the ultimate stalwarts, guys that were just always able to do it because, frankly, the slog of the season is sort of part of what makes it a challenge.
Yeah, they're taking the challenge out of the whole thing.
That's what the thing is, that it's a long, long season. Can you make it 6 months of doing this day in, day out?
And you know, teams are not going to take this into account, but maybe they should. And it comes back to what we were talking about earlier in the week about it's entertainment and then it's winning. You don't think that Aaron Judge should be playing on Jackie Robinson Day?
Well, wasn't he displaying on social media the special spikes he's wearing?
Yeah. So give him a day off tomorrow.
That's the thing. They're tone deaf, Michael. That's the best way to explain it to these analytic guys. All right, you figured out a way to win, although only one team can win at the end of the day, so you still have 29 failures technically. So it doesn't always work. Every day you end up losing. Somebody in the analytic world thought they had it figured out today and got it wrong. But there's just certain times to have a player of his stature, of his color, not play on Jackie Robinson Day? Is that too much to ask of all the days off? Can you get your head up from the stupid numbers? And the vision that I have is that lime green visor, and there's like a big calculator next to them. They're crunching the numbers. Can you lift up and just look at the calendar, see what day it is? It's a big day for your sport. Everybody wearing 42, the sacrifices that were made 75 years to the day.
That's a big one, too.
And you are an African-American player on one of the biggest teams in the world?
Real quick, though, he'll still participate in the festivities pregame.
Yeah, because that's what everybody comes to the ballpark for.
Well, I know, but at least he's still wearing the 42. He's still out there. He's a
And I'm not blaming Judge. I'm blaming the decision-makers who thinks it's a good idea to sit Judge. I'm sure Judge wants to play. But can you get up from the numbers one time and just have a feel for the situation?
And the thing that I don't like, and we talked about it yesterday, and believe me, I promise everybody, we're not going to do this every day, but it's all done in advance. Like, I think these lineups were made up in spring training. So Joey Gallo gets two hits, and he doesn't get hits very often. You sit him the next day. You need to beat the Blue Jays whenever you can. You sit Stanton. I mean, there's an off day on Monday. There's an off day on Monday. I don't know.
I mean, by the way, let's also be real. Off day on Monday, Michael. They're playing Baltimore all weekend. They got an off day the whole weekend.
Well, it better turn out that way.
How about this? Play him on Jackie Robinson Day. Sit him on Sunday. Let him get two straight days. Maximize it.
But you know what's funny, Peter? We talk about, like, as you said, you don't really – there's not as much exertion minute to minute in baseball as there is in other sports. A lot of standing around, getting your swings. But by having him dress, come to the ballpark, probably had batting practice, you know, probably had to go through all the rituals.
It's not an off day.
He could still pinch hit, right? He could still end up coming to the game. If somebody got hurt, he'd have to jog out there. So he's got to go through all the prep, put the uniform on, do all the things he has to do. If you really want to give somebody a day off, listen, go stay at the hotel. Relax. Get room service. Watch the game on TV.
By the way, I want to ask a player. We got to do that. You know what? I'm gonna text someone right now. I gotta ask this question. Do they enjoy getting the day off, to Don's point, when it's not really a day off?
Like, I'll tell you a story. When Joe Maddon was managing the Tampa Bay Rays, and he was considered then really off the beaten path in the way he thought. We were talking behind the batting cage, and he said, if I had the guts, what I would do, when I give a guy a day off, I'd have him sit in the stands and watch the game. Not have a uniform on. There's no chance that he's going to play. He said, because if you're in a uniform and you have to sit on the bench, that's not a day off. He said, you have to be engaged. You have to be ready to pinch hit. He said, the reason I say guts is because imagine I have a guy sitting in the stands and the game goes into extra innings. I don't have any players. He said, it would have to take an incredible amount of guts to do that. He said, but that's the only way you could say it's a day off. You don't do anything. You don't ever put the uniform on. You don't take batting practice. You just sit in the stands and watch the game like a fan. And that conversation I had with him was maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Nobody's done it, but you guys are right. As long as you're sitting in that dugout, you took batting practice, what kind of day off of it? You could say, well, he's not standing in right field. Well, okay, then DH him.
But I just hate, as a talk show host, as a fan, as just a person with an opinion, to have to sit there and just hear, well, that's just the way it is, Don. Sorry. It still bothers me to no end. It does. And you're seeing it in the NBA. I mean, football is excluded because there's only 17 games now. It's not a hockey thing. I don't know how it is in soccer, Andrew. If there's load management, if there's times where guys need days off, I don't know. I don't follow the sport. But I go by what Dave Maloney said. If I'm healthy, I want to play.
All I know is this. If my boss – Pio or Brad from Hot 97 said, hey, Peter, you know what? You've been working so hard. Do us a favor. Take off Monday. I'd go, wow, really? Fantastic. They go, yeah. Listen, come on in. Come on in with everyone and just set up in the other room and sort of relax and just be ready. I still have to wake up and come in? It's not a day off.
And also, Alex made a great point. I know it's apples to oranges, but it's still a decent comparison.
By the way, apples and oranges are similar. They're both very popular around fruit.
But like you mentioned our show. Like, if you turn on our show and one of us is missing, I'm sorry, it's a different show. Now, obviously, there's going to be days we miss. People get sick. We have vacations. That's understood. But it's a different show. The way we do it's different. The way it sounds different. So, I'm sorry. The Yankees are not the Yankees without Aaron Judge in the lineup. Just not.
Where did Don go?
And there are going to be people and you're going to be packed with Yankee fans down there in Baltimore. It's a weekend. I'm sure people took the trip down there. And Aaron Judge not in the lineup is disappointing to a lot of people. And the Yankees aren't the same. Yeah, they'll still pound Baltimore for 25 runs this weekend and walk away sweeping the series, or at least they should. But it's just, it's different. I mean, when I grew up and I fell in love with sports, I fell in love when the Dallas Cowboys came to town, I could tell you the entire roster of the team because it never changed for 10 years. We already have to deal with that with free agency, and that's not realistic. But that is, or here come the Yankees, and the first name you think of is Aaron Judge. And on game eight, oh, he can't play.
And I brought this up yesterday with Aaron. You know, that 9-8, nine legitimate starters into eight. And I think that plays into it as well because yesterday you sat down Aaron Hicks. And once again, where are you going to play DJ LeMay? Oh, we're going to play him at third today. But we want Donaldson's bat in the lineup, so he'll be the DH. So somebody gets knocked out because you've got to fit 9-8. You can say, oh, I think this is great. Yeah, it is great to have a lot of talent. But I think I really truly believe after talking to him yesterday, they are simply banking on somebody getting hurt. Because this is not sustainable to continue to rest people this much and this early.
Now,
Aaron Judge not playing in Camden Yards on Jackie Robinson night. I mean, come on.
And do these guys get hurt, Michael, because of the wear and tear of a long season or just blank happens? Right? Like if there's an older player and he just, you know, he's just not going to be the same. He's going to be hitting 220 in August and September because he played just too many games in a row. I get that. But, you know, we don't want these guys to get hurt. Well, how has most of Judge's injuries happened? You get hit by a pitch against the Kansas City Royals, dove for a ball and hit his shoulder, ran into the wall trying to catch a fly ball. Not, oh, he's just played too many games. He's 30.
Here's what it comes down to, everybody. It's not changing. We're just pointing it out that we don't like it. It's not changing. And, you know, if you look last year, they kept Judge healthy, and they'll say that's the reason why. And they kept Stanton fairly healthy, and they can say that's the reason why. So we can't refute it. We could say we don't like it. We duly noted. Right. Duly noted. But I don't think they're changing ever, 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 ever. And, I mean, baseball is nothing compared to the load management. I mean, they miss so many games. I mean, Kawhi Leonard misses like 15 games out of – and he hasn't played at all this year – 15 to 20 games out of 82 is a lot.
And we bash the load management in the NBA, too. And that's 82 games, and that's built-in days. I mean, you'll play three games in four nights. You have, you know, you'll probably have a half a dozen back-to-backs. But still, it's not like, you know, the war of attrition with baseball. But that's part of the beauty of the game. Peter said it earlier. Part of the game is, can you survive this long season?
And by the way, Don, I am trolling people here, but I'm sorry, I mean this too. We got a lot of calls insulting the fake wrestling crap that Peter's into. You know what those guys and girls do the day after WrestleMania?
They go show someplace else and do it again.
They show up and do Raw on Monday and just keep working. So, like, yeah, if you want to use the standard for what makes something impressive, the competitive nature of it, how about the effort one exerts? I'm sorry, it's weak.
Now, we did say we talk about, you know, Jackie Robinson. 75 years ago today, he broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. This was a guy who was one of the great athletes in American history. Look at his exploits as a football player at UCLA, a track star at UCLA. His worst sport was actually baseball. This is his worst sport. Wow. Played basketball, too. Did it all. An incredible athlete. Finally got his chance. I think he was 28. And it wasn't just breaking the color barrier, everybody. It changed the world. I don't think that's hyperbolic. It changed the world. It's one of the great days in American history, one of the transformative days in American history. Yeah, it's built around a sport. He broke into a sport that had been all white. But I think it awakened the rest of the country to some of the inequities. And, you know, there's a lot of people in our country, they go, you know, stick to sports, stick to dribbling, whatever. Jackie Robinson didn't play that game. Now, the first couple of years, he kept his mouth shut. He didn't fight. He didn't answer back all the hate because that's what Branch Rickey told him to do. But please take a look at his life after he retired. Please take a look at it. Civil rights leader. Dove headfirst into things. Called out Major League Baseball for the lack of a black manager. And black people in the front office. This wasn't done that often then. This was a man that had a life that made a difference in this country. So I know today's sports-centric with everybody wearing Jackie's number 42, but please take the time to read about this guy's life. It wasn't just a baseball player. Don, I know you're reading that book.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was not just a baseball player. What he meant to this country is much more.
No, and really, and the book begins, and I'm reading true. Kostya Kennedy wrote the book where his first and only minor league season was with the Montreal Royals. So in Montreal, it's very accepting because they were just forward thinking up there. So there was no real issue. So that was a great place for him to get started. But in the league he played in, he'd have to play in some very, very tough places in the South and in areas of the country. And just the things that he went through, the people. I mean, this is during a time where African-Americans were being lynched, killed for no reason. You know, we're not talking 400 years ago, 300 years ago. This is 75 years ago. This is after World War II. African-Americans who fought in this country and then come home and can't drink from the same water fountain, can't stay at the same hotel. Jackie Robinson would have to stay in a separate hotel than the minor league team he played for and some of the places that he played with the Dodgers. And what it did for, you know, a forward-thinking place, you know, at least a little bit more forward-thinking in New York City as opposed to other places around the country is that you saw the way he was being treated. It woke people up to what's going on in certain areas of this country. And for him to be able to go through that, believe me, all ballplayers get taunted, not to the extent that Jackie Robinson did. And he couldn't be average, Peter. He had to be great. One of the great parts of the book is the Dodgers in 1946 had to play a best of three because they were tied with the Cardinals and lost that series, and the Cardinals went on to win the World Series. Any other situation, Jackie would have been brought up late in that season and probably would have helped the Dodgers win the league and maybe win the World Series, but they didn't want to bring him up in the pressures of a pennant race. He was that good of a player. He could have made an impact. His WAR, I think, for the first few years of his career, Michael, like was like 7 or 8. Like he was that good a player. And he was dynamic, and he was fast, and he'd get into a rundown and just captivate the entire building when he would do that. And then he started in 47, and he was able to hit the ground running. But it's amazing what he had to go through, and he couldn't be just average. He had to be great, and he was.
Well, and Michael, I want to say something, but let me ask you a question. Speaking of that greatness, because I think when young people listening hear about Jackie Robinson, I wonder how much they associate him with what he did for America versus just how good he was on the field. Where is he in the overall lexicon all-time ball players?
Well, he's in the Hall of Fame, so he's certainly in the upper echelon. But I don't think I think young people just think, oh, he's the guy. He's the first African American in baseball. You got to read deeper into it. It was so transformative what he did,
and just the level of play was so incredible. I think you said earlier in describing him, you talked about how big an icon he is in America beyond sport. I truly believe, you know, when you have conversations about what people from history you could, if you could have lunch with one person in history, he's a reasonable person for that list. You're talking about a guy who, beyond sport, he combines so many different things. You're talking about a truly all-time great America. Don, if you were to pull out a top five Americans, Jackie Robinson will be in the conversation. It's that important because when you think about it, the fact of the matter is, and I know people don't like talking about this, our horrible history with race in this country is the number one systematic problem we have as a nation, and Jackie Robinson may have done more because of his position and how big sports are to this country. This side of Dr. Martin Luther King, he may be as important as anyone.
Yeah, you're right. You know, we'll talk to Stephen A. Smith about this and also the upcoming NBA playoffs, and that's in the Celtics on Sunday. So Stephen A. joins us in just a moment on this important day in American history right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.